Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Kevin Cronin from Colorado Springs. Kevin is a former NSCA education coordinator and has been the head strength and conditioning coach at Colorado College since 2012. He's here to share his thoughts on the role of today's strength and conditioning coach, how to improve buy-in amongst coaches and players when it comes to working with new technology, and we'll also hear from Kevin about whether it's better to lift before or after running, and talked about some of the differences between internal and external workloads. He'll share his experiences balancing Division I and Division III athletes, and what he considers to be the most valuable insights from the First Beat Sports Monitoring platform. So let's get started. Here's your host, the head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Okay, everyone, I'd like to welcome you to this first edition of the podcast here. My name is Benjamin Jensen. I'm the National Account Manager for First Beat in North America, and I'm happy to introduce our guest today, Kevin Cronin, working out of Colorado College. And just getting straight into it, could you just give us a little bit of background on your career, kind of what you specialized in and how did you end up at CC?
Yeah, I started my undergrad career at Sonoma State University, where I played collegiate soccer for a little bit. And then kind of got into the golf business, which kind of started my career with strength and conditioning. But after undergrad, I went up to Western Washington University in Bellingham, Washington, and got a master's degree in exercise science with an emphasis in human movement and performance. And kind of along the way, I was fortunate to write the strength and conditioning program for our golf team. My senior year of college, they actually ended up winning the national championship on the men's side, my first year of grad school. So a lot of the guys that I worked with in undergrad, they actually played the national championship in Bellingham. So I got to like hoist the trophy, and that was like kind of my first experience. And then was a GA at Western Washington University for 2 years. Between my first year and my second year, I did an internship under Shannon Turley at Stanford University. And then when I got done with graduate school, was fortunate that Donnie Mabe and Jeff Madden at the University of Texas gave me an opportunity to go do an internship down there. Spent about 8 months in Austin, and then left Austin to take a job at the National Strength and Conditioning Association in Colorado Springs, and haven't really left. You know, I was kind of looking to get out of the NSCA, and was fortunate that in 2012, the job that I have now popped up and have been here ever since.
Excellent. And so as a strength and conditioning coach, what do you see as your main role and responsibility, and kind of how has, in your opinion, how has that changed over the years, if any?
Yeah, I think when I first started here, my role was to get kids to participate in a structured strength conditioning program. Like, I'll be the first to admit it, our first couple years, we didn't have very good attendance on the Division III side of things. Kids can show up voluntarily once the off season starts. So my role then was to build relationships and get teams into the room, you know, and try to build a foundation that in turns kind of got us to where we are today. Nowadays, I don't really have to worry about that. So, you know, I think my role is just to kind of be the face of our program. You know, I talk to all of our coaches. We've got 17 varsity sports and 350 kids, and responsibility wise, you know, I think we need to do our due diligence to make sure that our kids don't spend 2 hours down here, you know, so logistics and things like that, that allow our kids to train effectively and efficiently is one of our huge responsibilities. You know, aside from the creating programs that improve performance and decrease the chance of injury, you know, I think our responsibilities kind of lie in some other spots here, just with academics. You know, it's a very high academic institution here. So, you know, we try to make sure our kids are getting in and out of here in an hour, 15 minutes. But yeah, so early on, we were just trying to get kids to come in the door, and now we've been able to kind of evolve from that and worry about some other things.
Okay. And yeah, so you actually, you just touched a little bit quickly. You do have a unique situation where you're at a CC with the mix of Division III and Division I athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, people always say that. And for me, like, we've just taken the way, you know, I did things before that I was exposed to before, and we just kind of dropped it here. You know, like, I think our Division III kids probably take it on the chin, and I don't really talk to a lot of people about like their situations and what they have to deal with at the Division III level. But we treat our kid, we treat our kids the same. You know, we hold our kids to the same standard, whether you're a first round draft pick for a NHL organization or you're a men's tennis player. You know, like we hold everybody to the same standard. Mm-hmm.
And kind of on that same note, how do you see, obviously with some recent events, have you seen major changes even occurring at CC as far as, you know, now we're talking about overall student wellness, you know, and these student athletes' safety?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, we talk to kids that come from clubs, whether it's a Division III kid or a Division I kid on the soccer side, you know, they've had heart rate monitors, they've had GPS units for the last 2 years. And you're like, wait, what? You know, I played soccer at a relatively high level and we never did any of that. So I think there are a lot of places, regardless of level, that are looking at that, like the well-being and the wellness of the kids. You know, my brother was in town this week and we were talking with our head men's soccer coach and they were just laughing about how kids go about the recruiting process now. My brother and our head coach have both had a situation where a kid said, yeah, you know, coach, I'd love to talk to you and I can talk to you between 3 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. Oh, and our head soccer coach is like, are you kidding me? Like you have 30 minutes, you know? So it's cool that there are some people in various positions that are saying, hey, we need to look at what we're doing with these kids when we have them, because they have so much else going on that if we can mitigate some of the stress that they're being exposed to during the short time we have them with data, whether it's heart rate, whether it's GPS, whether it's HRV, like it doesn't really matter. Like as long as these people are looking into it to say, hey, can we affect a little bit of change to have our kids be in a better spot? You know, it's crazy though, man. Like kids are, it's just different. Very different.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to touch, I've seen one of your previous presentations and you posed the question, is it strength and conditioning or conditioning and strength? Kind of, what are you trying to say by that?
So in the context of that, I was doing a lecture on like our conditioning system. So we run the 30-15 intermittent fitness test and then we prescribe training accordingly. And what we have to do on our end is our kids always run before we lift. And that's mainly because of logistics. Like we have certain spaces on campus that I can book for our teams at a certain time. So like if men's, like example, this afternoon, men's lacrosse starts at 4:45. So we can book space on the turf for us to go out and do our conditioning, do our movement stuff. And then when we're done with that, we can shoot into the weight room. So I was kind of posing the question, like, where does it fall, right? Like, do you hit the weight room and do whatever you need in the weight room and then go out and condition? Because research wise, there's evidence that depending on what you're trying to get out of your conditioning session, you should condition after lifting. But we just can't really do it because we don't have the staff nor the facility to, and I'm using air quotes, like optimize when we condition. So.
Okay. So basically the practical application of kind of the environment that you have is basically kind of what dictates how you're able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I just read, so you've got, is it a $38 million facility coming for, is that for the ice hockey program that's going to be on campus? Is that correct?
Yeah, we just got approved for, I think it's about 39, but give or take a million. So our ice hockey team has played at Broadmoor World Arena for quite some time. And our new ice hockey coach, Mike Havlin's really pushed to have our guys on campus, like mainly for like a wellness sake. Like our kids spend 30 minutes in a car, 15 minutes to get to practice, 15 minutes to get back. So the big push was like, hey, if we get these kids on campus in a competition rink, they will be more effective students and more effective members of our community because they spend more time on campus. So he made a push. It initially started as like a practice rink and somebody gave a very big donation right out of the gate. I think it was $9 million. And then it kind of just grew from there. And we're currently part of the City for Champions in Colorado Springs. So the city's going to give us like $9.4 million to finish the project from what wow. is public knowledge. Okay. So that's coming down the pipe.
Okay. Well, some, definitely some exciting times coming there. All right, let's go ahead and hop on a little bit. Let's go ahead and look at the role of First Beat. And so you're in your second season working with First Beat, and kind of what was the reason you chose to go with First Beat, and kind of even on the same time frame, you know, Coach Bennett with the soccer program has been there for 13 years. Why now to invest in, you know, sports technology?
Well, you know, I think initially I'd heard great things about First Beat. You know, we had a hockey trial for a little bit, and that was like kind of our introduction. And, you know, I think falling in love with something is always a little aggressive to say, but I think that's what it was. Like, we brought it in and it did all the things that we needed to do. It didn't take so much time to get data out of the system, and it doesn't take so much time to evaluate the data once it's in the system. And so after our hockey trial, I kind of knew that if we were ever presented an opportunity where we got like a lump sum of money for heart rate, we were going to pull the trigger with First Beat. I was fortunate enough to have some Catapult units, geez, in like 2012. So women's soccer kind of started GPS collection then, took a little bit of a hiatus because I had a trial that ended up not ending because of somebody who left the organization and they kind of lost track of the units. but we ended up giving those back, and it took kind of a year to sit back, and we just did some wellness surveys and just talked to the kids and talked to the coaches about like how they perceived practice. And we just found like it wasn't enough. You know, and so fortunate to stumble across a lump sum of money through an alumni donation, and Coach Bennett said, "Hey, what do we do?" And we kind of put our heads together, and I said, "Well, I think we go with First Beat on the heart rate side of things, and we go player tech on the GPS side of things," and kind of just went from there.
Okay. And can you kind of dive in a little bit? How do you use First Beat kind of on a day-to-day basis with the soccer program?
So the kids keep their straps, which is super nice. Like, they have everything with them. I usually just bring the computer and the tripod with a sensor out to practice, hit start. I usually task a assistant athletic trainer to check on the data to make sure that it's being collected. And then I run back into the weight room. And then when practice is done, I run back out to the field and turn it off and chuck it in our Pelican case and bring it back in into the facility. But usually run the report in the morning. So we run it in conjunction with player tech. We really only kick out calories, shrimp, training effect score, because we don't feel like if we give our coaches too much information, they're just really not going to understand it. So if we've really tried to hang our hats on like calories per minute and trip per minute. But I would say on a daily basis, those are two numbers that our coaches see every day to kind of quantify our internal load through trip per minute and calories per minute.
Okay. And how did you kind of decide on those, which data points to show to the coaches? Did you already have that in mind, or was there some trial and error in giving some reports and data, or how did that play out?
You know, I think we use the ice hockey experience to kind of say, oh geez, like we gotta be careful what we say to make sure that we're like getting our point across. But Casey Bond with the Avalanche and Eric Renegan with the Blues were pretty big time on kind of helping me extract some stuff. We liked Trimp. Our coaches tend to practice a little long. Jeff Bennett does a good job of not doing that, but I think Trimp per minute really showed them that we can practice for a short period of time and still have an intense practice. That connection kind of started with some of the Catapult stuff when we would do player load per minute. Jeff started to understand like, oh wow, like if our player load is whatever over 2.5 hours, but our player load per minute is X and we only practice for an hour, like, wow, we don't need to practice for 2.5 hours. So once we got First Beat, it was like, oh, well, cool. We can just call it trip per minute to kind of mimic that like player load per minute number, because it kind of worked for us in the past.
Okay. And how about, so it seems like Coach Bennett really bought in pretty quickly, so you didn't have a challenge there. How about the athletes? I mean, how did it go with kind of from their perspective?
You know, our kids, I'm notorious for like leaving the computer open in the office. And so when, you know, we have some kids that'll come in every day of the week and, hey, what was my heart rate yesterday? And I mean, our kids have always bought into like the way we condition them and get them ready for the season. But having trip per minute and having trip numbers for games and for our conditioning sessions to show them, hey, like what we are doing in the off season is preparing you for competition based on these numbers. And so it's been great. Like our kids love it. Like they'll come in and they're flipping through the graphs and, it's pretty funny actually. You know, like if a lift gets finished, there's like four girls around the computer, like flipping around between like the day before. And it's funny.
Nice. And I guess, kind of on that same boat. So so the players feel they benefited from it. I mean, do you have some that are actually, you know, I've had some teams that certain players really needed to pay attention to the amount of calories they burn if they're trying to maintain weight or, you know, even vice versa. Is there some data points that have been really important for specific athletes?
Absolutely. You know, I think we learned this with ice hockey a really long time ago. Like as guys maintain body weight, they're less likely to suffer soft tissue injuries. And that's just kind of what happened. And now we have a number, right? We can say 1400 or 1300, like 700, we can tell them where they fall on like a caloric expenditure, and then they can go and handle taking care of that. So that one's been huge. You know, like we, knocking on wood, we had like a hamstring strain this year and she missed a game just because we weren't playing a team that really mattered. Like we had a girl for soft tissue wise miss a game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's helped us immensely. You know, it's also nice to take like the player tech calories and the first beat calories and put them together and go, okay, cool. Like let's side with the first beat calories as opposed to the player tech calories, just because it's more accurate. But that's been a huge one for us.
Okay, cool. And then also I just want to get your opinion on this too. So there's, you know, some coaches that just don't want their players to wear the system for games. But, you know, in my opinion, you know, you're missing one of the biggest training loads of that week, probably the most important one. How important is it for you to get that game data in order to be able to you know, control those training loads for the next session or the next week?
I think it's paramount. Like our men's basketball team's kind of dabbling with some heart rate stuff, and hopefully Jeff Bennett doesn't hear that because women's soccer is not doing anything right now. But so anyways, we were trying to get heart rate on them during games. I was saying like, hey, we got this system. Like, I just want a little bit of game data. Like, can we do it? Like, we can get a bunch of guys on it, you know, like use the first beat system, like knock out a couple games and then kind of go from there just to see what's happening. And they just weren't into it. But for me, like, I agree with you 100%. Like, if you don't have game data, you almost can't really worry about what else is happening during your week because you don't know what's happening in a game. Like, we know that our trip per minute on a Friday and a Sunday is going to be above 1.8 to like 2.2 for kids that play a lot of minutes. And when we look at our practice, we need to be able to say, hey, if 2.2 is 100% for our threshold for a game, we need to make sure that if we're tipping that, like with a heart rate response, that our GPS data isn't through the roof, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's been huge for us. We're okay with things being intense. You know, we live at 6,000 feet and it's important for us to get a high intensity training session at least once, maybe twice a week, once we get into like the back end of the season. And it's been cool to say, hey, coach, like heart rate response was there and GPS numbers were down, like nice work, high five, you know. And we've compared days of the week to previous days of the week because our coaches have a plan for a Thursday and we can compare it to the previous Thursdays to try to keep us on track a little bit.
Okay, so it seems like, I was just moving on to some examples of where you've seen data influence decisions. So obviously right there, you know, they've got their practice plan for Thursday. So if you looked back at previous Thursdays, you would make adjustments, or have you even pulled players back, or, you know, what are a couple situations where you've just seen data and made some decisions based off of it?
You know, I think when you have data, you can say a lot of stuff that potentially is going to like make you walk the plank, right? Like you... Mm-hmm. You can say, hey, coach, I don't think you should do that. I think you should do this. And if things go south, they're going to look at you and say, excuse me, like you told us to do this and we didn't play well. So I don't really try to influence it too much. I try to just provide them the information in graphs that show them that like this Thursday was harder than all of our previous Thursdays. And that actually happened going into, we had San Diego State on the road, and then we had New Mexico on the road second to last weekend of the year. And it sounds like I wasn't there because they were in San Diego, but they took what they normally do on a Thursday and made it bigger. So heart rate response wasn't that different, but our kids accumulated more mileage because it was a bigger space. So we almost doubled our mileage on a Thursday before a Friday game. And then we ended up tying against San Diego State and ended up losing on Sunday to New Mexico. Like, is that because we accumulated too much mileage on a Thursday? I don't know. I would never say that, but you know, that was an instance where we looked back at the data and we were like, oh, whoa, like we almost doubled our distance on a Thursday compared to previous Thursdays. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a conversation when they got back from the trip, and it was a little bit hindsight, you know, like we're talking about it on a Monday and the hay is already kind of in the barn, you know, both games have been played. And so it helped us, but it was a little bit late in the year where we kind of had to make a little bit of a change going into the next weekend. We had like Air Force at home for senior day, but. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, yeah, so you've been mentioning both obviously first beat and then using player tech to get that external load, you know, just for the other coaches out there, you know, how easy has it been to be able to balance the two systems?
Ben, I will say this. I am an army of one for the most part. Like Steven Woodworth, my assistant, is full-time with ice hockey. So at practice, at games, at everything. And we have 350 kids. And I can get a player tech and first beat report done in under 30 minutes. The exports are super easy. You know, I think that's one of the cool things about both systems is like they're easy to use. You know, like you can take the first beat system and hand it to the coaching staff on a Thursday and they can run it while they're on the road. You know, player tech stuff, the kids just turn them on, turn them off, and then I can clip the data up on the back end of it. So, you know, I think our system and the way we collect the data is pretty easy for us. Like it's not a lot of strain. You know, like we don't need to hire a sports scientist to run both of our systems.
Okay. So it's not adding another 5-10 hours to your workload every week.
No, absolutely not. And to be fair, that same report that I was just kind of talking about, that includes a wellness survey. So we have I have a tab in our pivot table that has our first beat data, our player tech data, and our wellness data. And it kicks out a graph that has all three variables on it. That's like super easy for our coaches to read and just kind of go from there.
Nice. So kind of on that same bout. So when we talk about internal, external load, kind of, I guess, go a little bit. Why do you use both? And then at the same time, what do you miss if you just go with external? Can you just touch on that a little bit?
You know, I think, again, we kind of learned this from ice hockey. Like when you have a kid that's got a really low heart rate and you got a kid that's got a really high heart rate, you know, you got a kid that's got a max of 205 and a kid that's 179 with just heart rate. For whatever reason, a lot of coaches are like, oh, these kids aren't working hard enough. Like their heart rate's not red. And GPS allows that to just go out the window. Like we got a kid on our women's soccer team who's got a low heart rate, but she's typically on the top end of miles covered during a game or during training. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of allowed us to like not have to have those conversations. You know, like we can say, hey, this is our trip per minute for this kid. Like we know that her heart rate's low, like don't worry about it. But like as a team, here's where we sit average wise. Like this is how much time we spent above 90%, yada, yada, yada. And we kind of do the same thing with our player tech stuff. But I think the big thing for us is when we look at, we do the same warm up every day. Our kids mm-hmm. go out and they do a 10, 15 minute warm up same day. So for us with heart rate, it's, you know, you're looking at the same workload that you do pretty much Monday through Sunday. And if kids are kicking at a higher heart rate, we know that that's potentially bad. So we take that info, we look at our wellness survey to see how they're feeling. And then we look at our GPS stuff. So I think, I don't know, now that we have both, I would say, oh no, like it's pretty important to have both. But, you know, I think internally the heart rate stuff is probably ahead of the GPS stuff, at least for me, because like when we're doing conditioning, like I know how far kids are running, mm-hmm. right? But when they're running, however far, like we need to know what type of heart rate response that given session is eliciting. So I think if you, you know, like put a gun to my foot, I would probably say heart rate. but But no, it's been big for us, you know, and we mess around. Like I'll admit this, like, should we do a better job of adjusting some of our ranges for our kids? Absolutely. But like I said, there are certain things in my day to day that I try to not worry too much about. Like, there's limitations in everything, right? Whether it's GPS, whether it's heart rate, you know, I think we've taken those limitations and just said, hey, these are limitations for these systems. That's cool. We're okay with it. And we just kind of go. But heart rate's been big for us. You know, our coaches understand, like, as spaces get bigger and as duration of drills get longer and as rest gets shorter, they drive heart rate up.
Yeah.
So that's been a big one for us.
Yeah, definitely.
It was a big win.
And how do you kind of see technology? Like, what do you think the role for technology is moving forward with the strength and conditioning industry?
You know, I think it kind of took off real fast and is like slowing down a little, because I think people are getting really hesitant of, I don't know, maybe the financials, or maybe, oh, I don't want to spend 5 hours running reports. Like, so I think it's good. I think what it does that potentially even makes me nervous is it puts a microscope on what our coaches are doing, right? Like, I send a report and I say, hey, this Tuesday was harder than last Tuesday. And you kind of leave it at that. But to be fair, it's me saying to our head coach, hey, your practice plan was harder than last Tuesday. Like, what gives? You know, even though I don't say that. So I think a lot of people get nervous with technology because, like I was saying, if you put your foot in your mouth, you're walking the plank. So I think it's a very split bag, and I think some people love it, and I think some people are a little nervous about it, and I think some people hate it. I think it's helped us a lot. You know, the way that we go about progressing kids into our conditioning, like, now that we know a little bit more internal load wise, like what our games look like heart rate response wise, because we just didn't have that before. You know, like when we jumped on with First Beat, that was the first time we got heart rate data for games. You know, like, I think the first day I collected data was spring scrimmage against CU Boulder. And it's just cool to be able to have stuff that allows us to affect change. You know, it's just like performance testing. You know, you test vertical jumps, you test back squat, you test 5-10-5, you test 10 meter sprint. You know, it's the same thing. Like, you're collecting data to say, okay, hey, what do we do next to improve these metrics? You know, and it's the same thing with heart rate and GPS. You know, you take that data that's specific to practices and to games and evaluate it so you can make change, so kids are more prepared. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. I think it's slowing down a little bit. I think people are nervous because they think it takes so much time, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it could be that some of the coaches that have been doing what they're doing for a long enough time, the last thing they want is to have some type of data set come up and say, you know, you're doing this wrong, or you're doing this, you know, you shouldn't be practicing this long.
For sure. So I kind of get away with it on the women's soccer side a little bit because I played. So I can have like conversations with our coaching staff and say, hey, like, you guys went 6v6. Like, what were your dimensions? And they like look at me like, wait, what? Like, were you small side or were you big? Like, what would you do? Like, you played 2 goals, you played 4 goals. So I think our women's soccer staff's a little more receptive to me because I played. You know, if I was, and I'm not, but if I was 240 pounds and 6'2", and I went upstairs and started talking about data when I was like a college football player as like my background, I don't know if our coaching staff would be as receptive to some of the feedback.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something I wanted to touch too, that before you had the system, more or less, you're basically on the eye test. I mean, is there any other tools you had before First Beat besides the eye test? And then, you know, like you just said, you just went 6v6 dimensions, you know, the time frame.
We're fortunate that we have 10 tendo units. So we really, really sided on, like, when we were trying to like mitigate some of the stress, we used our tendos, or we still use our tendos. We've measured 10 meter sprint and vertical jumps. And we just got to the point, again, like, not a massive staff. We got a lot of kids. So there's some stuff that we kind of chipped away at, and we don't really measure 10 meter sprint anymore just because it put a little bit of a cuff on us. Like, when we're coming into the weight room, like, got to get really warmed up to run 10 meter sprints. And we just kind of ran out of time. So we've measured jumps. We've always kind of done the wellness stuff, but yeah, I would say those are our bread and butter, like tendo units and counter movement jump and wellness surveys.
Okay. And I'm assuming, and I want to touch this too, because just looking at the team's ice hockey schedule for this season, you know, I'm just guesstimating you guys are doing about 20,000 miles of travel with going up to Alaska, Vermont, Maine, yeah. Boston, you know, Ohio, North Dakota. Yeah. You know, is there any specific recovery protocol you have for these guys after such a long trip?
You know, we don't. We've dabbled with some of the HRV apps on iPads, and it just got to the point where it was so cumbersome for the guys that we kind of stopped doing it. But they kind of fall in the same spectrum, right? Like every time they come in the room early in the week, like their first lift of the week, they do a 20 kilo counter movement jump. And we just look at average power, kind of look at that and see where they're at. And then kind of make suggestions accordingly. Steven's in charge of throwing those suggestions to the boss.
Okay.
So we just got to keep an eye on him in here. And Steven's fortunate that he gets to talk to coaches about that data. But they also do a wellness survey. So I'd say like across the board, we kind of do the same stuff. You know, it's kind of like a top-down approach. Like I'm in charge of the whole department. So there's some things that we do kind of across the board. But I do not report much to our ice hockey coach.
Okay, cool. And yeah, kind of closing up here. So what kind of advice would you have for a coach that's just getting started with First Beat? How to introduce it to the coach and then kind of the basic metrics just to start with?
Yeah, I think what happens a lot of times, you like bite off more than you can chew. You know, like when we first had Catapult, we were reporting like 14 metrics, and you just kind of get lost in the wash a little. You know, so I think first off, figuring out like what you want to know, ask yourself a question, try to figure out a solution for that question. And when heart rate is the solution to that question, you know, not deliver so much data that the coaches are like, oh my gosh, like I don't know what any of this is. Cause like, to be fair, if you wanted to export 15 different things from First Beat, you could, which is a killer part of the system. But for us, you know, we really took the approach like, hey, this is new to us. Let's not look at a bunch of stuff. Let's just like kind of hang our hat on two metrics and kind of go from there.
Excellent. Well, hey, I think that's good for this session. Appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. You probably got some people in the weight room waiting for you soon. So we'll let you get back to it. But just for our listeners, if you're interested in seeing Kevin present, he's going to be at both NSCA and CSCCA next year at their annual conferences. And if you're interested in having more or getting more information about First Beat, you can drop us a line at sports@firstbeat.com or give us a call 435-363-9533. Again, Kevin, thank you for your time and all the best.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533, or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.